in the chapter I have here on the legality of the drone strikes, that this is against international law and it's against U.S. law. But what about the killing of Americans with drones overseas? I mean, didn't you think that Americans, by the Constitution, have the right to some kind of judicial process? I see a lot of heads shaking yes. Well, I think that most Americans thought that was the case until the Attorney General told these law students that that's not the case, that it turns out that American citizens are not guaranteed judicial process, but they are only guaranteed something vaguely called due process. And it seems like this can be done on Terror Tuesdays in the White House by the president and some of his advisors. Well, the best response to Eric Holder didn't come from the international or the constitutional lawyers of this country. It came from a late night comedian named Stephen Colbert. And I just want to read you what Stephen Colbert said. He said, yes, the founders weren't picky. Trial by jury, trial by fire, rock, paper, scissors, who cares? Due process just means there is a process that you do. And in this case, the president meets with his advisors, decides who to kill, and then kills them. If we are going to win the never-ending war against terror, says Colbert, then there are bound to be casualties, and one of them just happens to be the U.S. Constitution. So let's give a hand to Colbert for being the truth-teller of our times. So this might all work, in quotes, for the U.S. government if the U.S. were the only country that had drones. But this is not the case. It's not like nuclear technology that is so complicated. It's actually a simple technology that can be replicated and can also be bought on the open market. So the U.S. right now, even though we manufacture very little in this country anymore, we still manufacture a lot of weapons, and we are the number one manufacturer of drones. In fact, in Southern California is the hub of a lot of the drone manufacturing. But number two in production as well as in use is Israel. Israel and the United States have long had a collaboration on drones. In fact, the drones that are the lethal ones came from an engineer who worked in the Israeli military and moved to the United States to start a company that would then sell these to the Pentagon. The Israelis have used the drones during the invasion of Gaza in 2008-2009, when of the 1,400 people who were killed, over 800 of them were killed with drones. And drones are continually used in Gaza by the Israeli military. In fact, it's used as a selling point by the military when it tries to sell these drones overseas to say, this has been battle tested time and time again. Again, of course, the guinea pigs are the Palestinian people. So the Israelis are number one when it comes to the sale of drones overseas. They sell 85% of the drones to 50 different countries. Now, they say these are surveillance drones, but so were the lethal drones surveillance drones until somebody strapped some weapons onto them. They can be easily converted from surveillance to weaponized drones. The number three producer is China. China recognizes a growth market when it sees one and is now producing dozens of different kinds of drones. So what do you think other countries who now have these drones are thinking? Why shouldn't China say, we have been fighting those Tibetan terrorists for so long, now we're going to go to the United States where some of them are living and just drop a Hellfire missile and kill them? Or why shouldn't the Russians kill the Chechens who are living overseas? Or why shouldn't the Cubans say, those known terrorists who've been living in Miami for so long, we ought to send in a missile there and drop it on their condominium. And if we kill a couple of neighbors in the process, well, you know, oops, that's what happens. Or the Iranians who downed one of the U.S. spy drones. They said they hacked into the system and they showed it for all the world to see to say, look at this beautiful spy drone that we now have. Thank you very much, President Obama, for this gift. And lo and behold, a couple of months later, they reverse engineered it and now have this very sophisticated spy drone. Why shouldn't they be using it to spy over the United States? Well, we know the answer to those questions, and that's until now, because the U.S. is so powerful, other countries don't dare to do it. But how long is that going to last? As I say in the book, what goes around comes around. And it's not just what might come back at us from drones that other countries or other groups might be dropping on people in the United States. There is the issue of drones in the United States by our own government. So let's talk for a minute about drones here in the U.S., because it's really fascinating. Raise your hand if you think there's already a lot of drones being used in the United States. Raise your hand if you don't think there's a lot of drones being used. Okay, the latter group was correct. And that is because the regulation of our airspace is being done by the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, and their mandate is to keep our airspace safe. Well, they know something that the general public doesn't know, and that is these drones crash all the time. In fact, the Air Force has admitted that a third of the drones crash, and the CIA doesn't admit anything, so we don't know how many of their drones crash, but we can assume that it's a lot. And we even know that the very big drone, I mentioned the Global Hawk, the size of a commercial airplane, crashed just about a couple of weeks ago in Maryland, and luckily it crashed in a swamp. But it could have easily crashed above a residential area and killed a lot of people. So the FAA has been reluctant to give out a lot of permits, but it's also been reluctant to tell us how many permits it's been giving out. And it took the group called the Electronic Frontier Foundation to sue the FAA to start getting some of this information out. Some of the permits, and there are only about 300 permits right now that agencies in the U.S. have. Some of them are government agencies like the FBI, Homeland Security, the Border Patrol is using them on the southern and the northern borders. Some of them are companies that are testing out the drones. Some of them are universities, state universities, that are working with the military on this drone program. And a handful of them are police departments. Well, the drone manufacturers have a problem with the slow pace that the permits are being given out with in the United States. And so what do? They form their own lobby. And of course, what does a very good lobby in the United States do? It buys Congress people. And so they have done what the American way is. They've bought their Congress people, and they now have their own drone caucus in Congress, made up of 58 members of Congress, mostly Republicans, but Democrats are in there too, including some self-described liberal Democrats. And they, according to their mandate, they are addressing the urgent need to have more drones being used overseas and at home, both for commercial and law enforcement purposes. And so together with the drone industry and the drone caucus, they wrote a new piece of legislation that was signed by President Obama. In fact, on Valentine's Day of this year, a great big Valentine's present for the drone industry. And it says the FAA must open up the U.S. airspace totally to drones by the end of September 2015, and for law enforcement before that. Well, I mentioned that there are some police departments that are experimenting with drones. The drone lobby would like to see every police department, and there's about 18,000 of them, would like to see everyone have their own fleet of drones. Well, the problem is not only the permit so far, but the problem is also money, because police departments, like every other department in most places, are broke. They're cutting pensions, they're cutting salaries, and so where are they going to get money to buy drones? The federal government, that's right. And so here comes Homeland Security to the rescue, and the Justice Department as well, to say, we will give you grants to experiment with these drones. So it's like a drug pusher coming and say, you know, here, little girl, wouldn't you like to try this? Getting them hooked on drones and getting the other police departments around them to say, hey, you know, we want drones as well. So I talk a little bit in the book about this new phenomena of drones coming home. And I wanted to quote the CEO of a company that sold drones to a police department right outside of Houston. And he said at a press conference that these drones were designed for the police departments to use for surveillance purposes, but they actually were also designed to be weaponized. And they could in the future be outfitted with what we call less lethal systems, like tasers that can electrocute suspects on the ground, beanbag firing guns called stun batons. They can also have hand grenades. They can also have 12-gauge shotguns. They said, rest assured, said the sheriff in this press conference. He said, no matter what we do in law enforcement, somebody's going to question it. But we're going to do the right thing, and I can assure you of that. So I don't know, are you feeling reassured? So either is the ACLU and other civil libertarians who are saying that everything is in place right now for a 24/7 surveillance society, and that if our police departments indeed get their hands on drones, they can use them to spy on Muslim community, black community, who else might they want to spy on? Code Pink, the peace community, environmental activists, you name it. We already know that many of these groups have been infiltrated by the FBI, so why shouldn't they be spied on by drones? It's very interesting, though, because this threat of drones coming home to spy on it is something that has sparked a real response in the United States. And so we gathered together a couple of hundred people in Washington, D.C. at the end of April to talk about what can we do about this. So first, in terms of things that we can do overseas, we talked about a campaign that would step up the kind of visible protests in front of Air Force bases around this country. And we've identified many dozens of Air Force bases and are trying to get communities like the Code Pink groups, Catholic worker groups, and people who were so active during the Bush administration to protest in front of the military bases, protest at the sites of the drone manufacturers, and other offices that are involved in the production and the use of drones. We were also told by some of the lawyers at the drone conference that one of the best things to do would be to focus on the CIA's drones, because that is so patently illegal that there can be justification to say that the military should have drones as part of its arsenal, and yes, they should be regulated, but why should the CIA have drones? The CIA is not a military organization, it's a civilian organization, and according to international law, when a civilian organization like the CIA is engaged in militant activity, they should be considered unlawful combatants. You've heard that term used about the Taliban. Well, that's what international law says about the CIA as of drones. And the other thing about the CIA is that it has no accountability. I mean, they can kill wherever and whenever they want, and there is nothing in place to get the wheels turning to find out what happened. And so we have been focusing on Dianne Feinstein as the senator in California, who is the head on the Senate of the Intelligence Committee. And we're going to pass around a sign-up sheet now. We will be taking these to her office. We went and met with her office last week in California, and now we're going to meet with her in Washington, D.C. So please sign on to this so that we can show that there are thousands of her constituents that are feeling that Dianne Feinstein is not doing her job, that she should make sure that our government is respecting international law, and part of what she can do is take drones out of the hands of the CIA. Another thing that we want to do is to take a peace delegation to Pakistan. And for the first time, this would be people coming from the United States to work together with groups and individuals in Pakistan to try to do a march to the areas in northern Pakistan where the drone strikes are killing so many innocent people. We will indeed do this at the first week of October, the 2nd through 10th of October. We don't know if the Pakistani government will allow us to go to that region, but if we can't get there, we will be bringing lots of people from northern Pakistan into the capital, Islamabad, to meet with us and to tell their stories so we can come back to the United States with more firsthand information about why these drone strikes are so dangerous. If you are interested in that delegation, perhaps you can come see me or my colleague Tighe Barry right here at the table afterwards, and we can tell you more about it. There's also a place on the sign-up sheet where you can check if you're interested in that. There is also underway an effort to regulate drones on the international level. You might have heard how campaigns have done that in the case of landmines, cluster bombs, and other weapons. And there's a group made up mostly of scientists that's working with the United Nations to try to come up with some way to regulate the use of drones. And it's very interesting that just last week, for the first time, the UN has taken up the issue of drones at the Human Rights Council, and that the head of the Human Rights Council has asked the United States to justify its use of drones according to international law, has issued a 28-page report that calls on the United States to say why it is not capturing these suspects instead of killing them. And it called for not only accountability and justice, but for reparation for the victims of the drones and their families. So that is quite an important development at the United Nations. And in terms of drones here at home, well, I talked about how these police departments are wanting drones. So there's one simple thing that we're going to be asking you to do, and that is call your police department. We're going to pass around a piece of paper now that has just three simple questions on it. And if you can make that one phone call, that really could be a difference between your police department getting drones or not getting drones. So I hope that you'll take that action. The other is to try to get cities throughout this country to say that they want to be drone-free zones, passing resolutions at the local level. And we talked to some of the organizers, including the local Code Pink, about trying to spearhead that here in this area. Let's give a hand to those wonderful women. And so, Charlotte, can we say that this will be something that Code Pink will be looking into here? Wonderful. And if there's anybody that wants to work with you on that, how can they get involved?
Call the Peace and Justice Center.
Terrific. And if you want to look at more depth at any of these issues, we have them on a new site called droneswatch.org. So I want to end just by invoking a question that a friend of ours asked. And he is a Pakistani lawyer that we have been working with on this issue of the drone victim. Made a lot of money and started hearing more about drone victims, and went and started talking to some of these victims' families. And the more he learned, the more horrified he became. He stopped doing his corporate practice, and he started to work for free to represent drone victims. It's funny because he used to work also with the United States, the U.S. Agency for International Development. He also worked with the FBI on terrorism cases. We used to come to the United States on an expedited visa until he started working with the drone victims. Then he no longer was so welcome here in the United States. In fact, he sued the head of the CIA in Pakistan for murder. And of course, that wasn't seen too kindly by the U.S. government. But he said, had this question that he posed. He said, "Can you trust a program that has been in existence for 8 years, that picks its targets in secret, that faces zero accountability, and has killed almost 3,000 people in Pakistan alone, whose identities are not known to their killers? When women and children in Waziristan are killed with Hellfire missiles, Pakistanis believe this is what the American people want. I would like to ask Americans, do you?" So this is a question I think that we have to answer with a resounding no. We do not want to kill women. We do not want to kill children. We do not want to kill anybody. We are tired of war, tired of the killing. It's been over 10 years now. And a program that is so counterproductive, a program that is creating more enemies faster than we can kill them, a program that violates international law, violates domestic law, violates our Constitution, and violates the sanctity of human life, we have to answer with a resounding no. So let's remember that while right now the American people might still think that this is a program that, according to U.S. counterintelligence chief in the United States, John Brennan, he said it is a program that is ethical, just, wise, and surgically precise, that our government is lying to us, that we have to educate people to turn those numbers around, that in a recent poll that came out that looked at 22 different countries and asked people, what do you think of the drone strikes? The only ones that said they were okay was the United States, people in England, and unfortunately people in India who I guess thought it was okay to kill Pakistanis. But for the rest of the world, they thought it was absolutely terrible. So we should, on the one hand, perhaps feel empowered to know that the majority of the people around the world have more information that we than we have, and understand how dangerous this drone program is. So our job now is to take the majority of American people and have them join the world public opinion to say, stop the killer drones, stop the drone program, end the killing now. Thank you so much. I think that there's a lot of truth to be said that this is the military-industrial, and you know, it's the military-industrial congressional complex, and it all feeds into each other, and yes, they want to keep the American people in a state of fear and want to keep selling these war machines, and war is in their interest. But I think that there's some other elements involved as well, and certainly some of these drone attacks are indeed mistakes. And an element in that is that we have not created the countervailing force to the military-industrial complex. We have not created a movement that's independent of partisan politics. When George Bush was in power, we had hundreds of thousands of people who had come out on the streets to protest. When George Bush was in power, there was an outcry around Guantanamo, around indefinite detention, extraordinary rendition. In fact, you in this area have been very involved in exposing how a local company was involved in flying people to places where they would be tortured. And this outcry, unfortunately, became very muted once President Obama came into power for several reasons, but one is partisan politics. People wanted to give Obama some time, they liked him, then it became, as we got closer to these elections now, well, you don't want to speak out against a Democrat. And of course, there were other issues like the financial crisis, and people became much more focused inwardly. But I would venture to say that if George Bush were in power, and this kind of incredibly destructive drone program were going on under the Bush administration, we would have hundreds of thousands of people out in the street again saying no. So we can say that there's this industrial military complex that always feeds on war, but I think we have to look at ourselves in the mirror and say, why is it that we're not able to build up a stronger movement that is independent of party politics and that forces whoever is in power to have the kind of foreign policy that we the people not only want, but we need in order to be safe at home and in order to be putting our resources into rebuilding this country and not creating more enemies overseas.
Thank you very much for being here and coming to San Jose. I wanted to ask you, so I saw you mentioned about Iran downing the U.S. spy drone, and then it also said on the slide that it was then the country was helping Venezuela, and I just wanted to know if you can expand a little bit. I'm interested in that.
Yeah, sure. Iran downed a very sophisticated U.S. spy drone, but it already had drones before that, and it had been selling drones or giving drones to groups like Hezbollah. Iran is working with the Russians and the Venezuelans producing drones in Venezuela. And of course, the Venezuelans would say, why shouldn't we manufacture drones? Any country should have the right to do that. There is no international law that says that we can't do that. So it's not only friendly countries that are getting drones, it's countries that the United States government considers its enemies. So before Samina talks, I just want to say that you in this community probably all know her, but I want to just pay tribute to somebody who has, since 9/11, been doing everything in the power of this amazing woman to bring people together and to heal the wounds of 9/11, and that's Samina.
Thank you, my dear friend, for what you have been doing before 9/11 and since 9/11, especially for Muslims and Pakistanis. I just recently returned back from Pakistan, and hatred against America and Americans is at record high. And part of the reason is because there are innocent people being killed. There are terror attacks. When we leave our airports to come out of the country, our photographs are taken, and I just asked somebody at the airport, why are you taking my photograph when I'm leaving the country? And they looked at my passport and they said, we are not doing it, it's your government. So we meddle into everybody's business. If my fellow Americans want to be safe, I urge each and everyone who is here to go educate others. We must take care of other people. We must be worried about their security so that we could be secure. Otherwise, all these innocent victims and their, you know, orphans and widows and all that, are doing just, you know, they are just having so much hatred in their heart. And there is no other way to explain it. And we are doing the PR for Taliban, for Al-Qaeda, when we are killing people. They are having easier time recruiting people. And, you know, people are worried about madrasas and Sharia laws and this and that. Madrasas are just means, you know, educational, institutional. And Taliban and all that, and even in your photographs, when they say militants killed, a lot of the people who are even holding the guns in their shoulders have nothing to do with Taliban. That's how they dress up. You know, that's part of their dress code. And just like if anybody owns arms here, they are not terrorists just because they own the arms. So I am just urging, we are not outraged because we are not paying attention. So thank you again.
Thank you.